Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. Pull up a chair or just pull up your car and settle into the Newsbusters podcast. We are taping and transcribing and writing up the latest media outrages and excesses. And, well, we must admit the networks were pretty tough on Tuesday's Senate testimony, tearing into President Joe Biden's Afghanistan withdrawal fiasco, and how he lied to George Stephanopoulos that no general told him we should leave a force of 2,500 troops behind.
Your top military advisors warned against withdrawing on this timeline. They wanted you to keep about 2,500 troops.
No, they didn't. It was split. That wasn't true. That wasn't true.
They didn't tell you that they wanted troops to stay?
No, not in terms of whether we were going to get out in a time frame all troops. They didn't argue against that.
So no one told your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
Not that he can recall. So he's either lying or his brain has left the building. That is not a good position to be in. Biden has tried so hard to blame everyone else and claim he did what anyone else would have done. Now, imagine Trump here disregarding all the generals. Now, you could say maybe he should have disregarded the generals. You could say maybe Obama should have disregarded the generals if you're a lefty. If you think that Afghanistan was a disaster since 2008, you could try that. But the narrative here was always Trump was presumed to be contemptuous of the experts. He was such an amateur. He was so unhinged. He never listened to expert advice. And let's face it, experts like being treated like experts. It's pretty easy for them then to have contempt for someone when they are not agreed with and treated as experts. Then they tend to run off and talk to reporters. General Mark Milley was in the crosshairs. Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi pushed Milley to admit that Biden's withdrawal damaged our global credibility and that there was more in that Biden interview with Stephanopoulos.
Now, I think you were right, General Milley, when you advised that our credibility would be damaged. Our credibility has been gravely damaged, has it not, General Milley?
I think that our credibility with allies and partners around the world and with adversaries is being intensely reviewed by them to see which way this is going to go. And I think that damage is one word that could be used, yes.
Generals are very political people, and that was on display Tuesday. You notice they had this tendency to not want to share, well, I don't share what I discussed with the president. I can't share these details of conversations. And yet you have the clear sense that they get on the phone and they share all kinds of details with Bob Woodward. This is my favorite portion of the hearing when Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee asked General Milley about his incessant chatter with the liberal media people as they composed their anti-Trump tomes just headed for the Amazon bestseller list.
General Milley, yes or no to this. Did you talk to Bob Woodward or Robert Costa for their book, Peril?
Woodward, yes. Costa, no.
Did you talk to Carol Leonick and Philip Rucker for their book, Alone, Can I Fix It?
Yes.
Did you talk to Michael Bender for his book is, frankly, we did win this election, the inside story of how Trump lost?
Yes. Yes.
And were you accurately represented in these books?
I haven't read any of the books, so I don't know. I've seen press reporting of it. I haven't read the book.
Let's have you read the books and then let us know if you are accurately presented.
Absolutely.
And portrayed.
Happy to do that.
You just have to laugh at this idea. Oh, I haven't read the books. When you grant interviews to journalists, you naturally have enough ego to want to see how they treated what you said. You want to make sure it came out accurately by your judgment. I do not buy the general saying he hasn't read these books. Now, maybe he had underlings clip out the good parts that he was mentioned in so he can say, I didn't read the books, but he clearly read the stuff about him. Or he did what we call an Inside the Beltway book read. You find your name in the index in the back, and then you read the parts where you're mentioned, and you don't read the rest. That's seen as quite common inside the Beltway. Who has time to read the entire 300-page book, or in some cases, 500 or 600-page book? I'm going to go into the index and read about me. It's just not believable that Milley says he didn't know how this all came out. He did say, I've read press accounts, as if that's all he had time for. Well, he obviously had hours and hours to talk to these journalists, to talk to Woodward, to talk to Philip Rucker, to talk to Michael Bender, the Wall Street Journal. You sort of want to joke that maybe Afghanistan would have turned out better if you spent less time with reporters and more time with military matters. Wouldn't that be nice? But apparently this is an important part of the general's office day. Spend time with reporters, agreeing with them that Trump is crazy pants. And Milley surely thought he could give these interviews because he thought, well, Trump's toast. I don't know the exact date of these interviews. I don't have copies of these books. I would assume that he probably granted these interviews either in the fall, late in the fall, or maybe after the election, because he didn't have any fear that anything he said about Trump was going to be damaging to his career. Now, if he said something damaging about Biden that might upset the incoming president, well, you know, that's the nifty thing about granting interviews to anti-Trump journalists. They really don't have any interest in the anti-Biden tidbits. Their liberal readers don't have any interest in that stuff. And yet, Washington Post reporter Josh Dawsey tweeted, Trump talked to almost every book author under the sun, but he attacks Milley tonight for doing the same. Yes, earth to Josh Dawsey. We're talking again about Milley talked to the Washington Post in Woodward and Costa. Milley talked to the Post in terms of Rucker and Leonig. And yes, Trump gave access to the Post when they were doing a Trump-trashing book in the 2016 campaign called Trump Revealed. This is where we go back and say, hey, earth to Dawsey. This is the whole irony of the thing. You're actually trying to punish Trump for granting access, but you never punish Hillary Clinton for not granting access. There was no Hillary Clinton investigating book by the Washington Post in 2016. And if there had been one, there's no way she would have granted them any access. Hillary Clinton's plan was, well, I'm going to give 10 minutes to a Washington Post reporter who's then going to ask me puffball questions about my granddaughter. This actually happened with Ann Gearin. What a pathetic display, which once again underlines what you should already know. The Washington Post is a Democrat attack sheet. You also have to laugh at General Milley pretending he's so careful in spilling the beans. He answered one question with, I won't share my personal recommendation with the president, but I will give you my honest opinion. And my honest opinion and view shaped my recommendation, and I recommended that we maintain 2,500 troops in Afghanistan. Huff, puff, puff. Is this guy stuck on himself or what? I will offer you my honest opinion, and my honest opinion should have been taken seriously by more people. He obviously got on the phone with liberal reporters and shared lots of his personal thoughts on the president. The idea that this guy is like I'm the soul of discretion. It's obviously not the case. And when you grant reporters these things, and they're off the record, or they're on background, or maybe they're on the record, some of it, but there's a lot of dish in there. There's a lot of places where Milley's not going to be quoted in a book, but he allowed you to go and ask somebody else something, so you'd have knowledge to say, hey, what about this thing that happened over here? Because Milley gave you the background to be able to ask that question. General Milley here was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Trump, chosen by Trump, who was there to undermine Trump. And he seemed more impressed with the idea that he was there to undermine Trump than he was there to actually help us win in Afghanistan. My column was about Kamala Harris and her media enablers. Washington Post reporter Cleve Woodson had a story on Sunday in the paper. It was on A6. Maybe not everybody saw it, but it was really kind of pathetic. The headline was, "Handed a pile of no-win issues, Harris builds a network, gains credit with liberals focused on migration, abortion, and the vote." So the theme of this piece was all a bunch of liberals quoted in here, all a bunch of pro-Kamala liberals, not any anti-Kamala liberals. It was the notion that, oh, Kamala's building goodwill with all the left-wing radicals. This kind of badly disguised promotion is what we should expect from the Washington Post, but it's also a natural outgrowth of boosting the number of black journalists in the newsroom. When the Washington Post says we're going to make more of an effort to put black journalists at the top of the paper with more responsibility, more reporting, more beats, more focus on racial justice, what you mean is more bias, more leftism. Because just as these people associate democracy with the Democrats, they associate blacks and racial justice with the Democrats and the left. Nobody there is going to promote a black journalist who doesn't have a strong leftist opinion, let alone a conservative opinion. Now, I want to focus on a piece that our Joseph Vasquez did for Newsbusters. It's very discouraging. A piece on The New Yorker, which has a public radio show called The New Yorker Radio Hour. If you're a pompous liberal who thinks you're an intellectual, but loves the little cartoons in The New Yorker, how droll, then you can listen to The New Yorker Radio Hour. It's made at WNYC Radio, which is an NPR affiliate, which I'm sure gets what they call a community service grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And WNYC lists at least 66 radio stations where you can hear The New Yorker Radio Hour. Well, this latest episode had this headline: "Should the climate movement embrace sabotage?" New Yorker editor David Remnick, who is one of Barack Obama's most embarrassing superfans in the media elites, was going to interview a guy named Andreas Malm, a Swedish professor and author of the book How to Blow Up a Pipeline. This is what's now considered respectable interviewing and journalism at The New Yorker. How to blow up a pipeline. Remnick said, "The effects of climate change are already here and they're catastrophic." So apparently it's so bad that it was worth promoting an eco-terrorist, a manifesto for eco-terrorism. Andreas Malm said, "I am recommending that the movement continues with mass action and civil disobedience, but also opens up for property destruction. I am in favor of destroying machines, property." You know the left. They always claim they're going to spare the humans and they destroy everything that the humans rely on. Right? "I'm going to burn down the CVS as long as there's no people in there." This is nothing more than a call to eco-jihad. Andreas Malm sounds like the Osama bin Laden of the Greenpeace set. And The New Yorker is promoting this eco-jihadi like he's somehow the idealist on climate. He's going to go the extra mile. Somehow words like extremist or fanatic don't apply. I mean, this is what the term extreme is usually used for when you're a political reporter. Extreme or extremist denotes that you're willing to go to violence, that you're willing to embrace extreme tactics. But here we have The New Yorker with their top hat and fussy monocle saying, "Let's blow up some crap." It's just amazing. It's disgusting. And this is the same sickness that we saw with the original Unabomber back in the 90s. I don't know if you remember this guy, Ted Kaczynski. He killed 3 people and injured 23 others in a nationwide bombing campaign. Usually it came in a package. Watch out for the FedEx package on your step. If you're part of Big Oil, box go kaboom. But you had journalists like, I mean, these were famous quotes from the Media Research Center in the 90s. Elaine Shannon was a reporter at Time magazine, and her whole line on Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was, well, he wasn't a hypocrite. He lived as he wrote. He had a bike. He didn't have any plumbing. He didn't have any electricity. Oh, okay. So he killed people, but it's okay because he rode a bike and lived in a scummy little hut in the woods with a copy of Al Gore's book, Earth in the Balance, if you don't remember that. We all enjoyed that. You ever notice how liberals never get hit for this kind of stuff? Every time there's a bombing or a riot, it's go right to blaming talk radio. Go right to blaming the conservative media. Fox News is just like Al-Qaeda. But if you find Al Gore's book in a terrorist hut, well, he has nothing to do with that. Then there was Boston Globe columnist Alex Beam. These quotes are from 1996. He wrote, I can't bring myself to hate the Unabomber. Quite the opposite. I found his story curiously affecting. And these are all the people that are going to lecture us about insurrection and the violence on January 6. Do you know this book, How to Blow Up a Pipeline, was a paperback? It's published by a radical publishing house called Verso Books. This book came out on January 5. And within a few weeks, it was being celebrated in the New York Times. Back in January, I wrote a column on the New York Times Book Review championing, quote, new ways of thinking, unquote, about climate. And the book reviewer was a Times reporter named Tatiana Schlossberg. If you've never heard of Tatiana Schlossberg, she is the daughter of Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg. So she's a Kennedy grandkid. The lines that she used in this book review are actually used now on the Amazon page that the book, quote, advocates powerfully against despair and powerlessness. Now, she didn't overwhelmingly endorse the book, but that's the way it looks when you go to the book or the page on Amazon. She made the point that Malm doesn't actually offer instructions for explosions. Oh, how nice. He just makes it sound like it's a good idea, that it's morally right. She did say, the problem with violence, even if it's meant only to destroy fossil capital, is that ultimately it's impossible to control. Yes, that's true. It's disorder. It's violence. Violence can lead to violence. The pipeline is owned by somebody. What if they start putting armed guards in front of their pipelines? Philosophically, one can ask whether it's advisable or appropriate to publish a book titled How to Blow Up the New Yorker. How does that sound, David Remnick? Did you ever consider that, dummy? And at the start of this segment on the New Yorker Radio Hour, it says, this was brought to you by Intel. Do Something Wonderful has been the driving force at Intel for over 50 years. Now, what if we wrote a book called How to Blow Up Intel? Does Intel really want to be backing this kind of garbage? This is what happens. You blow up my crap, I blow up your crap. That's what happens. These people were all against blowing up abortion clinics. So am I. But then they say it's okay to blow up pipelines. Why don't we all just decide, and especially journalists, not to blow up stuff? How hard is that? David Remnick sits there in Manhattan with his Beatles haircut thinking he's the genius and he's justifying all kinds of garbage. It's embarrassing. You'd think somebody who is right there at ground zero on 9/11 would be a little more sensitive about jihadis and terrorism. Oh, but climate's different. No, it's not. Climate is like a religion. With Sister Greta Thunberg, the leading nun. She's the Mother Teresa, or the Daughter Teresa. It's like a religion, and this religion gets fanatical, and this is where the fanaticism begins. A good Catholic doesn't want to blow up an abortion clinic. They oppose everything that goes on inside. A good ecologist who's interested in human ecology. That's this guy's title. He's a professor of human ecology. But I kind of get the impression he doesn't like humans very much. A professor of human ecology should care about all humans. And you don't say, well, that guy, let's take out that guy. Let's take out this guy's pipeline. Joseph Vasquez, in this piece, talked to our friend Mark Morano. And he tied the drive for climate authoritarianism to the COVID lockdowns. We've seen this. Well, if you look for Andreas Malm at Amazon, you'll also find this book that came out in September of 2020. The title is Corona, Climate, Chronic Emergency, War Communism in the 21st Century. And so Professor Malm in this particular tome argues, if the state can mobilize itself in the face of an invisible foe like this pandemic, it should also be able to confront visible dangers such as climate destruction with equal force. The blurb for the book says, in this book, leading environmental thinker Andreas Malm demands that this war-footing state should be applied on a permanent basis to the ongoing climate front line. He offers proposals on how the climate movement should use this present emergency to make that case. There can be no excuse for inaction any longer. All the January 6th lecturers in the New York-based media have just missed the boat. No one blew up the Capitol. No one wrote a book called How to Blow Up the Capitol. So maybe they should all get together, have a little meeting over their fancy cocktails, and decide maybe they should all decry the eco-jihad. But guess what? They won't do that. They want to consider themselves the progressive idealists. They don't want to consider themselves the radical extremists. But that's, if you support how to blow up a pipeline, if you're going to treat this like an important manifesto, if you're going to use terms like intriguing to describe it, then you're the menace. And yet the media never think they do anything wrong. They are never the menace. They never cause anybody any problems. Well, that's why there's an opposing counterforce. We call it newsbusters. We are here to say the media doesn't always do the right thing. It's not always for democracy. It's not always for peace. Sometimes it seems to be egging on terrorism and crime. They should think harder about that the next time they try to lecture about deadly insurrections at the Capitol. Have the objectivity to be against this kind of violence no matter which ideology it comes from. Come to Newsbusters to hear about this once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.